The Guardian.
Hello and welcome to the Guardian Football Weekly Extra. The Premier League is over. West Brom joined Stoke in the Championship. Swansea are basically down after defeat to Southampton, despite the Saints having to stay in a hotel almost an hour from the ground. Huddersfield's new tactic of kicking the ball as far as they can reaps rewards with a vital draw at Chelsea, and that result means Spurs are in the Champions League. All that and plenty more on today's Guardian Football Weekly Extra. We have a panel here today. Jonathan Wilson, hello.
Hello.
Nice to see you.
Yes, very nice to see you.
Almost Bruce Forsyth. You almost fell into that trap. I had a tweet yesterday from Robert, which said, are there any plans to reunite Barry Glendenning and Barney Ronne on future editions of Football Weekly? I've listened to the Witch's Curse episode 24 times so far. I need some variety in my life. Barry, hello.
Hello, Max.
Barney, hello.
Hi.
Are you guys okay?
We're absolutely fine.
Yeah, the reaction to that was a little odd.
You got a column out of it, though, to be fair.
Yeah, I got a few lines out of it. Yeah,
I got a column out of it. You admitted you were wrong. And we've made our peace. Our new head of sport came in the day after, and he was listening to it. He was genuinely concerned that Barney and I had a proper falling out. Nothing could be further from the truth.
It was kind of a glimpse into the real Barry and I. I'm sorry it's been kept secret all these years. That was kind of normal.
What a preposterous idea that two people could disagree about football and still get on with each other. How is that going to work?
You describe Barry as much cherished. Hardly two words to write in the history.
He pointedly didn't say much cherished. By me.
No.
They seem sarcastic to me, though.
People
words.
Cherish Barry, don't they? Just an observation.
A series of landlords across South London cherish Barry.
Anyway, it's nice to see you getting on so well at the moment. It is early, and it is the earliest, to my knowledge, that we've recorded the pod, because we're all flying to Copenhagen. That's why my voice sounds two octaves lower than normal, and why this pod might be very, very short. And with no insights or content.
As opposed to long, with no insights or content.
Swansea 0, Southampton 1. Let's start there. Manolo Gabbiadini's winner, which was very exciting for me,
don't.
Barry. Well, I didn't do my Marco Gabbiadini joke. I wasn't going to do it on the pod because the guys who listen to the pod are in on it, the Marco Gabbiadini gag. But brilliantly, before I even tweeted it, a lot of people had tweeted me waiting for my Marco Gabbiadini gag, and the Metro got it completely wrong and they called him Marco Gabbiadini instead of Manolo. So I feel like I'm going to take some credit for that. But
do you think Manolo Gabbiadini has any idea who Marco Gabbiadini is, or is he just bewildered that people keep on calling him Marco?
I'm not sure, but I do remember he had an enormous wedding cake. I mean, the size of a small town, Manolo.
Marco or Manolo?
Manolo. Oh. Well, I get them muddled up, Barry. I don't know which is which.
There are probably listeners to this pod who don't know who Marco Gabbiadini is.
He was an English striker, wasn't he? He was an English...
He got one England B-cap.
Yeah, there was an era of quite good strikers who never really got anywhere near the England team. Tony Cotty barely played for England, if at all, did he?
I think he did play a couple of games, maybe. Yeah.
There were always these guys around, and he was very much one of them.
Explosive, like to strike the ball early. A key figure in Sunderland's promotion campaigns of 87-8 and 89-90.
Who now runs an award-winning guest house with his wife somewhere in North Yorkshire.
He's on radio in the North East as well.
Do we need to do anything more on the game, do you think? Southampton clearly deserved this, Barney, didn't they?
Well, they deserved it because they won, yeah. I thought Swansea were going to escape a few weeks ago. They've just suddenly become flaccid at entirely the wrong moment, and I guess when it mattered most. I find it really hard to warm to Mark Hughes, but he's obviously done something good there, and he's got the team playing and all that kind of thing, but they shouldn't have been in that position in the first place. That seems fairly clear if they'd been consistent through the season. I'm obviously pleased to see Mark Hughes jumping around looking pleased finally, which I didn't realise was in his repertoire.
I sort of agree. I find it hard to warm to him. Why do you find it hard to warm to Mark Hughes?
A little bit. What I find objectionable about him is the manner in which, no matter what goes wrong, and he did this all the time at Stoke, it was always the referee's fault. Never his fault, never the player's fault. Now, he did accept some culpability for Stoke's predicament the other day when the chairman, Peter Coates, said that they should have changed managers earlier. But as far as I know, Mark Hughes would have been the last person, you know, during his Manchester United days, say that anyone involved with the squad would have earmarked as a future manager. You know, they all thought Brian Robson would be the big successful manager. Hughes was quite lazy in training, fond of a pint. There was general surprise when he turned his hand to management. Has he been a good manager? I don't know. He's done a couple of decent jobs, but it's hard to think of anything too impressive that he's done.
The other slightly odd thing about it is, I mean, I'm repeating what I've heard here, is he's not known as a football man in that sort of sense. People say that he doesn't really mix with football people. He goes home and that's it. He doesn't have that big, oh, good old Brucey, or, you know, he's not that guy at all. And yet he seems obsessed with being a football manager and very determined to be one. I don't know if he was a particularly bad trainer or something. I mean, he was an incredible player.
Oh, he was an excellent player.
Yeah. I think he's sort of noted for being quite introverted.
Yeah, maybe a bit shy and introverted.
That point of just not really mixing with people. Must have been the 85-6 season. His form fell off a cliff because he got linked with Barcelona, and basically that pressure of everybody saying to him all the time, are you going to Barcelona? He just sort of couldn't handle. So one of the reasons United fell away, you know, they had that record start in 85-6 and then fell away. And his loss of form in the second half of the season was one of the reasons for that.
Can you be a good manager and an introvert?
Yeah, why not?
I don't know. I'm just asking the question.
I mean, obviously, if you are a brilliant football man, I guess you do have more contact within the game, maybe, and people are perhaps more prepared to do you favours in terms of loaning you players.
Mark doesn't go for a glass of wine after the game.
No, but I'm not sure he's exactly an introvert. He just doesn't do that. I mean, he's obviously good at shouting at players and things like that. I mean, I remember him as the man with the thickest ankles in football. I remember him as this absolute powerhouse. I've always struggled slightly when you see him in the flesh. Somehow I'm taller than him. But there's something about him as a real kind of hard purpose in his eyes. I definitely wouldn't call him.
He's been shrunk by a witch.
An introvert. It's possible they seem to be in charge of most things.
But I mean, has he done that good a job at Southampton? He's kept them up. Yeah. But that game between them and Swansea, that was two terrible teams throwing the kitchen sink at each other, and one of them just about prevailed. It's hardly a managerial masterclass. You know, he's being lauded to the high heavens for finishing the game with three strikers on the pitch, you know.
Well, it was a brave change to bring on Gabbiadini for a centre-back.
It was kind of an essential change because they had to win that game. So it was brave to the extent that he had to do it and he did it. But the thing I took from the game was less Southampton winning it or doing anything particularly good, but just how bad Swansea were. I think it happens sometimes with teams in mid-table and below that you end up not seeing them for a couple of months. And watching that game on Tuesday, I was just shocked by how bad Swansea had become. The difference between that and the last time I saw them, I couldn't quite grasp they were the same team.
Won 4 of his first 7 and then has won 2 of the last 10.
Yeah, and they've scored some, like 3 goals in the last 8 games, something in the Premier League.
Both teams are fairly toothless. The one thing Hughes has brought to Southampton, or they have started scoring goals under his watch, but before he was there, they couldn't hit cow's backside with the banjo.
I know Stuart James, who obviously sees them much more regularly than I do, has sort of said the back three doesn't really work for them, but Carvalhal seems committed to that. But then the front three they were playing are the two Ayews and Clucas. I mean, Clucas is a creative midfielder, seems a very strange, very negative move. And the Ayews, I don't think any players in football frustrate me as much as the Ayews. Like, Jordan Ayew is just rubbish. And he's not rubbish because he can't play football. He's quick, he's skillful, he occasionally scores great goals. He's just, like, his movement is awful. He gets caught offside repeatedly. Dede Ayew, you know when you see a player when they're really young and they look quite good, you sort of take a sort of slightly paternalistic interest in them. And, you know, I saw him coming through for Ghana. You know, he won the Under-20 World Cup with them in 2009. He was part of the really good Ghana side that got the final Cup of Nations in 2010. You sort of thought then, you know, he's a proper player. And I remember his performance when Ghana beat Tunisia in the Cup of Nations quarter-final in Franceville in 2012. And it's one of the greatest individual performances I've ever seen. Getting absolutely battered by Tunisia, you know, getting kicked all the time. Kept picking himself up, kept going again, won the game. I think he set up a winning goal in extra time. You sort of thought, yeah, he's a really, really top-class player. And then you see him sort of lumbering about on Tuesday, misplacing passes, playing like a player who's sort of 38 when he's 28. So sad that the two of them have seemed to have just sort of squandered their talent.
But is there a danger you slightly romanticise your African Cup of Nations? I remember when John Obi Mikel was the next Messi.
Mikel John Obi's debut.
He still is.
Mikel John Obi's debut in Port Said 2006 when he came on at half time and
the greatest performance you've ever seen.
Transformed a game against Zimbabwe.
let me stop you against Zimbabwe.
But you sort of thought, this is why Chelsea, Manchester United are squabbling over this kid. Yeah. Obviously, it never quite worked for him. But Dede Ayew was another level. That performance against Tunisia.
See, I'm seeing you in some press box in you've been attacked by a dog on the way to the stadium. You've waited 3 hours to get in. You're a long way from home. somebody does a step over and your world collapses in gratitude and how, this is why I'm here. This is the... Yeah.
Do you know what it is? Witch doctor's curse.
Did anyone enjoy the Marriott Hotel shenanigans, Baz?
Yeah, I've heard about the Marriott Hotel shenanigans. I'm not entirely sure what went on, but apparently Southampton weren't allowed to stay in the hotel they were supposed to stay in, which I believe is owned by Hugh Jenkins, is it? There is a posh hotel in Swansea.
No, that's the other hotel in Swansea.
Oh, I do apologize.
I think he owns Marriott,
but this was, their booking was cancelled. They had to go to a slightly different... But, I mean, it was brilliant the way they used it. There is a great tradition. Hotels are so important. This is a kind of deep football thing. I remember reading Bill Nicholson's book from the... early 60s when Spurs first started going into Europe. He used to go ahead of the team and explore the hotels, and there are long descriptions of the filth of the carpet, walking through darkened tunnels to some horrible block, the indescribable filth of the kitchens. And he would describe all this, and the idea is that there is some deep witchcraft in hotels.
But you see, that's the thing. At some point, I remember someone from Southampton saying, look, they cancelled our booking, but other people were allowed to book, and this is the only hotel that is fit for a Premier League side. I don't know what that means.
Footballers live in a... That's why they're obsessed with the hotels. Yeah. They live in this sealed world, and the idea of a slight change of hotel is just... It rocks their world to its core. Well, Southampton obviously used it as a brilliant motivational tool.
Mark Hughes said... something strange going on, because Ian Ladyman from the Daily Mail rang up Marriott and asked for booking for 10 people and was told he could have one. And the Marriott excuse was, oh, it's just not suitable for big booking because we're concerned about this virus. Well, 10 is quite a big booking, so it's something strange.
Hugh said it helped our focus. We used it as a motivating factor. We suspected that maybe some of the dark arts, I mean, that's witchcraft is what he's saying, were at work, but we didn't let it affect us. I'm not for 1 minute suggesting Swansea had anything to do with that. Maybe it was overzealous Swansea fans in positions to affect our hotel booking.
Well, see, the hotel is massive. It's a really big deal. You know, games are won and lost.
That result means that West Brom went down. They needed a draw, and they've gone. Who's to blame, Barry? Pulis, Pardew, or Darren Moore?
Oh, it's got to be Pards, isn't it? I know Darren Moore's hand is on the tiller when it went down, but maybe a bit rum to blame him. He's done a marvellous job in exceptionally difficult circumstances. But somebody mentioned the stat, was it on Monday, that if you took Alan Pardew's tenure out, West Brom would be in the top 10, you know, combining Pulis and Megson and Darren Moore's results.
Darren Moore, April Manager of the Month.
Yeah, it will be interesting to see if he gets the job. I have a feeling he won't. I don't know how much of their revival is specifically down to him. They clearly have improved, tightened up defensively. Every player knows what their job is and they're all doing their jobs correctly, you know, and various players from Chris Brunt to James McLean have made it fairly obvious that the players didn't like Pardew. He was asking them to be something they weren't, and they weren't able to be. And his reputation has taken quite a battering, you'd imagine, on the back of that stint in charge, and tough to know where he'll go from here.
Barney, when Barry was saying he didn't think Darren Moore would get the job, you were shaking your head as if you don't think he will either.
No, trying to get out of the Championship into the Premier League it's a really important... It's the job most football club chairmen would worry about, and Darren Moore hasn't managed a football team before, so they'll get someone who's a specialist in trying to get out of that, you know, a Tony Pulis type figure to try and get them out of there.
Do you think that's the right thing to do, or should we give it to Morey?
Obviously, like everyone else, I love Darren Moore, but I don't know if I'm sure he'd be fine. How hard can it be? He knows the players and he knows the club, and they obviously all feel good working with him. I'd love to see them give him the job, but I just can't see it. They take it, you know, it's this incredibly serious thing trying to get back in the Premier League. It's everyone's career, everyone's livelihood. It's a kind of coterie of men who are quite good at that.
Lots of players came in this season for West Brom. Oliver Burke, Jay Rodriguez, Kieran Gibbs, Hegazi, Sturridge, Barry. Did Gareth Barry come in this year, did he? Wow. Krigoviak, lots. Any of them pay off?
Not really. It's strange. I thought their business had largely been pretty good last summer. I mean, Krigoviak, Hegazi are both players. I sort of thought, yeah, they're sort of smart signings. They're sort of slightly better than West Brom's level, and they probably got them slightly cheap. Yeah, whatever went wrong after that second game of the season, yeah, it clearly is Pardew's fault. Yeah, but something had started to go wrong under Pulis. So the momentum was downhill, and maybe they assigned too many players, and that unsettled the balance of the squad.
Krikoviak was quite an interesting one. There was a bit of sort of discontent in mid-season from him, wasn't there? There was some sort of agent piping up, and
I'm not surprised. I mean, if you're a, you know, at sort of the peak of his career, He's going to the World Cup with Poland. A Poland team that is qualified incredibly impressively, has a handful of really good players. You want to have a great season before the World Cup. You've just played for PSG. You moved from Sevilla to PSG. You sort of think your career is peaking, and suddenly you find yourself in a relegation battle at West Brom under Alan Pardew.
Aspirational signing with Tony Pulis. It was this sort of weird. It's a bit like the Crystal Palace thing of let's play total football. Oh, hang on, no, let's not do that. It's this kind of weird mixture of what do we want to be and what are we, and also the idea that you have to please the fans by playing wonderful attacking football all the time these days, or they're going to complain. That seems to have crept in a bit.
It's also worth reiterating that the three teams going down from the Premier League not so long ago were held up as, this is how to run a football club properly. Southampton are going to escape by the skin of their teeth. They too were held up as, this is how a football club should be run. So
how should you, has that just changed?
Well, I don't know.
They've all wandered from the one true path, haven't they? I mean, we should say that
Swansea aren't necessarily down yet. They've got a -9.
Yeah, so they have to win and Southampton lose and there'll be a 9-goal swing. But given that Swansea are playing Stoke and given that Southampton are playing Manchester City, there is a tiny, tiny possibility.
Can you imagine? I mean, it would be absolutely marvellous, wouldn't it?
Well, it's not beyond the realms of possibility that Southampton could lose 6-0, 7-0. That's quite possible.
Swansea have to score goals, though, don't they?
Yeah, but they are playing Stoke, so
There are still plenty of this is how you should run a football club teams who aren't going down. I mean, your Brightons, your Huddersfields.
But I mean, Swansea clearly have moved away from a model that got them to where they were. You watched them the last sort of 10 minutes on Tuesday whacking long balls at Tammy Abraham. You sort of thought, did Brendan Rodgers die in vain?
A big friend of the pod, Ellis James, Swansea fan, was on stage in Cardiff last night, being kept up to date with Chelsea Huddersfield score by Cardiff fans. Is there any other worse way to discover the fate of your side? And Huddersfield defended again. I mean, it was sort of incredible there against Man City and against Chelsea. Essentially, for quite a lot of the game, they were just kicking as far as they possibly could. I just found it thrilling. I don't know if anyone else did.
Yeah, I mean, they were very good last night. Fully deserved the draw. Quite amused by Chelsea fans getting so worked up about time-wasting when they'd had three players booked themselves for time-wasting against Liverpool on Sunday. But Huddersfield's goal was an incredibly enjoyable goal. Just a ball over the top and lots of people running into each other. And finally, Del Potro putting it into an empty net.
So defending isn't dead?
Not in the low reaches of the Premier League, not entirely, no.
It was great, though, wasn't it? I mean, if you don't love David Wagner, there's something wrong. He's just, I'd like to spend every day hanging around with him. I love his voice. I'd like him to explain everything to me in his earnest German.
Do you mean 24 hours a day?
Yeah. Or just like... No, most waking hours.
Okay.
From the moment I wake up until...
Have you discussed this with Mrs. Ronnie?
She probably wouldn't be up for it.
Okay. But what he's done is incredible, isn't it?
Yeah, it's great. And the team, I love watching them at the end. They obviously really enjoy playing with each other. There's a lot of young players whose careers have progressed at the same time under him. And this is a massive success for them. And it's great. Did you see him being given the pumps? His trousers fell down. There was a brief snapshot of a frightening sight.
That's happened at Huddersfield before, hasn't it, this season? Didn't one substitute, Danny Williams? Do you remember that?
Yeah.
It was a full frontal. Did you enjoy this game, Barry?
Yeah, absolutely chuffed to bits for Huddersfield. Staying in the Premier League shouldn't be a massive achievement, but for them it is, because when Wagner took over, they were heading for League One without spending a huge amount of cash. He's got them promoted, kept them up, and not too many people thought he would do that. I think an awful lot of Einsteins tipped them not only to be relegated, but to be relegated by Christmas, or rock bottom of the league. So it's a huge achievement for them.
My friend Paul Merson, he said he was so convinced that Huddersfield would get relegated, and in his sort of rhyming slang, which is his own. He said that when a team are down, they are gonzo. He said they're gonzo. And he said he believed they were gonzo so much that on our TV show, he would dress as gonzo.
What is gonzo?
Gonzo from the Muppets.
From the Muppets.
Oh, okay, I was thinking like Hunter S. Thompson, gonzo.
No, Merce doesn't use that many Hunter S. Thompson.
Gonzo, right. Okay.
Right, just gonzo.
But Merson, he was right about Marco Silva, wasn't he? I mean, there was a lot of laughing and sneering at him endlessly. How can he possibly? But Marco Silva, you know.
I think actually, well, punditry is. It's much more difficult now than it probably was 20 years ago because everything you said is quoted back at you much more, I believe. So if you do make any predictions, you're not going to get them all right.
It's also necessary to have an opinion on everything rather than just one or two things you've just seen expressed in a couple of sound bites. For example, people are now becoming incredibly angry that I suggested Marco Silva failed, whereas probably his win ratio is the seventh best in the history of all, you know, something like that.
Well, I do think there's a lot of sneering at Merce, particularly. I think
he talked about Yaya Toure, and so we'll get onto it. You know, when Yaya Toure was signed, he sort of said, "Actually, look, they've already got De Jong and Vieira and Barry." And obviously, now looking back, that seems like a ridiculous thing to say. But at the time, it may not have been such a ridiculous thing to say.
Well, I think it's a lot of the grief he gets is because he's not the world's most articulate man. But and yeah, he says the odd daft thing, don't we all? But he knows his stuff. The day we spent in his company discussing football, I really enjoyed that. He's a very, very knowledgeable man and was an absolute top-class player as well.
So Chelsea, what you know, they started with Hazard on the bench. Was that, I mean, in retrospect, seems a mistake. They are very unlikely to make the top four now. How do we review their season?
I mean, never really got going, did it? It's just sort of been this sense of endless drift. They can still win the FA Cup, I suppose. They had that one great performance away at Atletico, and that I think is a baffling thing, that they produced a performance that good amidst a load of pretty subpar performance. But Chelsea, the season after they won the title, seem to do this again and again. Just sort of, they find it very hard to get going again.
But that's sort of okay if they are good and then bad every other year, then as a fan, that's much more than most people get.
I think the same pattern happens. They win the league, manager wants to then go out and spend and build on this, let's win the Champions League, and it's not been like that. I remember being the first game at Stamford Bridge this season against Burnley and being really surprised to see Conte in his blue tracksuit. It was like a protest. Everyone was in a tracksuit.
The protest tracksuit is another Chelsea trope, isn't it?
Yeah, and he was slouching around in his tracksuit, whereas Deitch was immaculate in his suit and like he was off to a wedding. And you kind of thought, well, what's going on here? But the tracksuit message seemed to kind of sum up the season a bit.
Spurs are in the Champions League now. They will either finish third or fourth. Liverpool could overtake them. Chelsea could overtake Liverpool. But Spurs beat Newcastle 1-0 last night in what sounded like that's sort of quite an edgy affair.
Yeah, it was one of those games where you just had to tough it out, wasn't it? Essential to win. The most important part of your season, getting in the top four. This is it. It's now or never. You've got to win. You're not playing well. You've got to just want it and win. And they did. So they go into the last game of the season with two other top teams, Chelsea and Liverpool, still slightly in doubt, whereas Spurs, who've actually spent quite a lot less than those two teams over the last 5 years, have nailed it. It's odd, isn't it?
Yeah, the thing you're neglecting there is that whatever witch's curse hangs over Tottenham, the witch's curse hangs over Newcastle in games at Wembley is much, much more powerful. That is a deeper, darker magic.
Yeah, that's an old magic.
I was trying to work out how sarcastic or not you were being there. At the start, I thought you were definitely being sarcastic, and then towards the end, I thought maybe you...
No, I'm just doing a big build-up for Barry's curse stuff.
Spurs, because now actually it doesn't matter if you finish third or fourth, because you don't have to play that qualifying game in the Champions League, which I think is quite a big deal. So
it's also a farce, though. To get the big four leagues get four places automatically, and half the places in Champions League group stage. Nonsense.
It's not my fault.
I didn't say it was. I was gesturing at the world in general.
Sorry, when did this happen? I was completely unaware of that.
This is the first season of it.
Okay.
I wasn't aware for it until quite recently. And then I heard it and I thought, oh, that's a good thing to know, because I bet some people don't know it, so I'll appear knowledgeable.
It's massively killed the coefficient, which...
Yeah,
me,
which was the only pleasure I took from football.
Yeah, the coefficient updated on a daily basis. It was huge. It was like when interest rates were a really big thing.
Do you have a coefficient spreadsheet?
Well, not anymore. Well, obviously. There's a bloke called Bert Cassis maintains a very good one. So if you just type Bert Cassis into Google, you'll find it. That is one of the great football websites.
So a genuine question about Tottenham.
K-A-S-S-I-E-S.
Thank you. Coming third or fourth, when other people have spent much more money, despite the defeats in the big games, should we look at that as a good season for Tottenham or not?
Are you asking me?
Yeah.
It's a bit meh, isn't it? Spurs should win something. You know, they've...
But they shouldn't win the league.
Everyone likes watching them play, I think, apart from Arsenal fans, I suppose. Everyone seems, you know, to agree that Mauricio Pochettino has done a very good job there. They've got some excellent players, but they haven't won anything. And I think...
Is that a psychological thing?
I couldn't possibly say. Of course not. That would be a ridiculous suggestion. But Spurs are your big club who don't win things.
Yep.
Or your dad, who's a Spurs fan, would you happily not qualify for the Champions League if it meant winning the FA Cup?
I just don't really mind. I quite like the football they play. I'm not so...
Come on, have an opinion.
I'm not so desperate for them to... You know, I was talking to some Newcastle fans yesterday and you know, on their way to Wembley. And I was out with a good friend of mine who's a Newcastle fan, and they were talking nostalgically about Newcastle like for so long. And we talked about, you know, the team with Ginola and Albert, and they didn't win anything. But that can still fill up 2 hours of a fan's time when they're having a lovely time. So I'd love Spurs to win something if they don't, you know, it's not in my blood, though, is it?
But I mean, I would generally agree with the point I think you're making, which is that trophies mean more than qualifying for Champions League. However, I do think this season of all seasons... they needed to be in the Champions League. Going to the new stadium, not being in the Champions League, both financially and psychologically, I think would have been a huge blow.
Psychologically, and, you say?
Yeah, I hesitated, but I said it. But I also think, you know, in terms of Tottenham's season, although there has been a sort of, for the first time in the Pochettino, there's been a sense of stagnation, it's still their third season in a row qualifying for Champions League. They've top team in London for the first time since, I think, 1995. They've had big wins against Dortmund, against Real Madrid. They've played really well, even though they lost against Juventus. I think there's still, you know, if you look carefully enough, there are still signs of progress. But the worry is what Pochettino said after that semi-final, the hints that he may leave. And if he leaves, half the squad will leave. And, I've always sort of thought it's impossible for this generation of Spurs players to win the league. But what they can do is be sold for sufficient money to buy the players who could win the league in 5 years.
The favourites, if Pochettino does leave, Grotbags and the Wicked Witch of the East. And that'll do for part one. In part two, the Premier League games that happened this week that didn't really matter. Welcome to Guardian Football Weekly Extra, part two. Leicester 3, Arsenal 1. Arsenal's away record of losing all 7 games in 2018. It's pretty impressive, isn't it, Baz?
It's odd. I can't think of an explanation for why a team with, you know, home form that would put them up among the title contenders can be so bad on the road.
Are they staying in the right hotels?
Possibly not. I'm not aware of their accommodation arrangements, but, you know, does it really matter? They lost against Leicester. They were good in spots, from what I saw.
Had a man sent off, didn't they? I mean,
had
a game
a man,
where...
You know, it doesn't matter. You know, Arsene Wenger's going. They're not going to qualify for Champions League. That wasn't going to happen anyway. It doesn't matter.
Wenger's been rumoured he's been rumoured to be going to PSG as some sort of general director of overall management.
Yeah, that's always seemed a likely destination for him in one form or other. It sounds like the kind of... I mean, I can't believe he wouldn't miss the... I mean, he's obsessed with being around the players, and he's a massive control freak. But he does know the people at PSG very well. I'm sure that would be a good fit. I don't know how true it is.
Do you have anything of note to add, Jonathan?
Only that Aubameyang, who I have to say I thought would not be able to play on the same side as Lacazette, turns out he can. And I think since he signed, only Mohamed Salah scored more goals in the Premier League.
Manchester City 3, Brighton 1, Yaya Toure's last game. Barney, you enjoyed his leaving do, didn't you?
I really like Yaya Toure. I feel he's slightly undervalued as a presence. I think he's, for those 2 years, yeah, two seasons where he was Kevin De Bruyne a little bit before Kevin De Bruyne. He was really a complete midfielder and scored so many goals. He was never he's in the Premier League Team of the Year a couple of times, but that was about it. But they obviously love him at City. And the presentation ceremony was quite funny. There was a lot of build-up to the special guest. They came in with the special guest. I couldn't wait to see who it was. And it was Kolo Touré in a wing-collared shirt, who gave a nice speech about his brother having just presumably stepped down from his normal seat in the stands. And
did he emerge from a giant cake? We know how fond... Yeah, it's a cake.
I think the cake thing's a bit overdone. The thing about Touré...
You don't want an overdone cake either, do you?
I think he may have felt a little underappreciated in England. He has an amazing story. The story of his career is such a success story. 7 years in weird leagues in Greece, and I think he was in Ukraine for a bit.
Yeah, he was at Metalurg, not even the biggest team in Donetsk.
But before he finally found a stage, you know, and you look at it, he's an absolutely brilliant midfielder, and I think sort of fighting against that has kind of driven him on a bit.
Also, sorry, about the Toure's, I've always had a huge amount of time for a pair of them since in 2006 at the Cup of Nations in Egypt. My hotel was very near the Cameroon hotel, and Cameroon were the grumpiest, least pleasant squad I've ever come up with. You go to the hotel, try and speak to somebody every day, they'd kind of fob you off, and it would get to sort of lunchtime, you'd have to kind of speak to somebody, so you just go down at the Mervinpick where Cote d'Ivoire was staying, and you could guarantee that if you spent more than 20 minutes in the hotel lobby, at least one, if not both, of the Touré brothers would wander through, utterly bored, happy to talk to anybody. About anything. And for that and that alone... And actually, Kolo Touré also, not just about anything, but he was prepared to speak about Sol Campbell. You know Sol Campbell when he had his breakdown and left at half-time? Which you sort of think, no teammate is going to talk about that. And he was quite happy to talk about it. So, yeah, they made my life a lot easier at a Cup of Nations in 2006.
Manchester City scored 104 goals this season, beating Chelsea's record of 103. And I think...
Only a Premier League record, though. Not a record.
Well...
Tottenham back in 60.
Yeah, but there was probably like 200 games you had to play in a season.
That's what the league used to be.
So they made lots and lots of records, Manchester City, and they'll break more and more in their final game, almost certainly. Tonight, Manchester United go to West Ham. Are you excited about this, Barry, or will you be in Denmark?
I'll be in Denmark, but I'll be paying very close attention. Yeah, I'll have someone in the crowd keeping me updated on events at the London Stadium.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Lukaku looking like a big doubt for the FA Cup final in Manchester United injury news. Michael Carrick to play his last game in Sunday's home match against Watford. Question, it says here, is he the most underrated England player of all time?
I think he's so underrated by everyone. At some point, he must be rated. I mean, the thing that Michael Carrick's underrated seems to be the only thing anyone ever says about him, and to say it quite often. I mean, maybe he's just quite good and... We've got into a habit of saying he's underrated.
This happened with Owen Hargreaves, that he was really underrated, and then everybody really started to appreciate him almost too much, and then he became over-appreciated.
Lee Carsley as well, wasn't it? Similar thing.
Same with Carsley.
A lot of people have said that England would have been a totally different team if we managed to base it around Carrick. He should have been in there, and then should have been one of those other kind of star midfielders. But the funny thing is, if you look back, a lot of the big games England have lost, particularly against... He's played a lot against Spain... played against Germany in the... he has actually played in a lot of those games against the better teams. And I remember Spain would always, be giving the runaround. I mean, you see him matched up against Xavi, you realise, OK, we've got a passing midfielder, but, there are passing midfielders and passing midfielders. Not that he's not a really good player, but I think the idea he would have transformed everything is possibly a bit of another one of our desperate lifelines we like to cling to.
Yeah. I wonder how many players who are exactly correctly rated. Who is there? Who do we think absolutely we are spot on with how we rate?
Kevin Phillips. Yeah,
that's it.
Well, everybody recognises him as being a great goal scorer, but not a really great player. Phillips is exactly rated correctly.
He's right in the middle, and players beneath him are all underrated, and above him are all overrated. Okay, I like that. Good news that Sir Alex Ferguson no longer needs intensive care after that emergency surgery on Saturday. He'll continue his rehabilitation as an inpatient at Salford Royal Hospital. His family have been overwhelmed by the level of support, as the club said, and the family continue to request vital privacy as he entered the next stage of his recovery. The playoffs begin this week. Good news, they will all use VAR. Derby play Fulham, Borough play Villa. The Derby-Fulham game's on Friday night, Borough-Villa's on Saturday at 5:15. The team that's finished third has gone up four times in the last 10 seasons. fifth place three times, fourth place twice, sixth place once. Who's going to go up? Jonathan?
I would expect a Fulham Villa final. And then Fulham have been the better team this season, but have you run out of steam at the wrong stage?
Any thoughts, Baz?
I would agree with Jonathan. Fulham are probably undeniably the best of the four teams, but who knows?
Birmingham beat Fulham in that last game, didn't they? When the Birmingham fans invaded the pitch, they ran up to Mitrovic and he said, "I thought they were going to hurt me." But they just all kept saying, "Please beat Villa in the playoffs." League One, Charlton Shrewsbury is tonight. Baz, while you're on stage in Copenhagen, one eye on the West Ham Man United game, one eye on Charlton Shrewsbury. The return legs on Sunday. Scunthorpe play Rotherham on Saturday. League Two sees Lincoln Exeter and Coventry versus Notts County. The National League playoff final is on Saturday. Boreham Wood versus Tranmere. The cheapest adult ticket, £36.
Wow.
It's a playoff final.
I'm going to that.
You see, if it was the championship final, would people complain? Why you know?
That's the cheapest ticket.
Adult ticket.
Well, I think it's a bit crazy when Wembley's not going to be sold out. True. So.
Interesting stat, by the way, before I forget.
Yeah.
In the top five divisions in England this season, every single team that got promoted at the end of last season, none of them were relegated.
Is that so?
Mm-hmm.
Very good.
I saw that on the Twitter. I'm afraid I can't remember whose nugget of trivia it is, so I can't credit them.
Well, congratulations. You know who you are. In more National League news, newly promoted Salford City are managerless after Anthony Johnson, Jono, and Bernard Morley cited irreconcilable differences with the class of 92 owners. They've led them to three promotions since 2015, won the National League North title just a few weeks ago. Speculation that Paul Scholes may take over. And Dulwich Hamlet have won promotion from the Bostic Premier Division to the National League South. They won on penalties against Hendon. Mass celebrations outside the East Dulwich Tavern. Much craft beer was drunk on Bank Holiday Monday. Good news for them after a tough season. Were you there celebrating? Hipster that you are, Barry?
I wasn't, but I'm very pleased with them. And they're still homeless, aren't they? I think they're playing their home games at Mitcham after getting turfed out of Champion Hill. So good times, but uncertain times for Dulwich Hamlet.
Yeah, they once declared me an enemy of football.
You?
Yeah, they had a poster for a game with, I think it was, a dozen enemies of football. So there's all the usual suspects, Thatcher, Murdoch, Lord Justice Taylor, weirdly, but I don't really see how you fit that in. And Fred the Red and me.
Why was, you?
Yeah,
I don't know. I presume the pretentious waffle I spout on a regular basis and taking the fun out of the game.
It's middle class self-loathing. You know, yeah. The interesting thing about Dulwich Hamlet, you know, threatened by property prices, but the club's also boomed on the back of what a lovely, friendly, middle class place East Dulwich is to live. You know, I mean, their fan base, their success. Not that there's anything wrong with that, but the two things are kind of tied up. And also why they managed to get such good publicity. They have a extremely well connected fan base, and thank God they do.
And then, yeah, despite them declaiming enemy of football, I'm delighted to see their success. And there's some lovely photographs of Jack Pitbrook from The Independent celebrating with Dulwich Hamlet players afterwards.
So you're an enemy of football. A Manchester United fan once in the crowd at Cluj said I was everything that is wrong with football. Literally everything. Have you, Barry and Barney, have you escaped?
Well, I once wrote a feature on sort of hipster football clubs and included Dulwich Hamlet in it. And they incorporated something I'd written into a chant, which they proceeded to sing at the next game, their next home game.
You're a hero of football?
Oh, no, it was very much making me an object of ridicule and mockery.
Okay. Are you the odd one out, Barney?
Oh, no, I'm sure I'm everything that's wrong with football.
Barney's like a hero at the Den, isn't he?
Yeah. You saved Millwall.
Yeah, I saved an unpopular club.
You're more important than Neil Harris.
I don't think so.
Well, that'll do for part two. In part three, some foreign and some Premier League fixtures that are utterly meaningless. Welcome back to Guardian Football Weekly Extra Part 3. Juve won the Coppa Italia, Barney, beating AC Milan 4-0.
Yeah, it was in the end quite easy. The match will probably be remembered for some dodgy goalkeeping from Donnarumma, who is very young still, 19, makes mistakes, makes good saves. But Juve are a fantastic team and incredibly strong, and I'm sure that they deserve to sweep all before them.
Do you? I mean... looking at how good they are and the fact they're in the Champions League next year, would Max Allegri want to go to Arsenal?
I've never understood that quite either, but then I don't know his situation.
Well, Paolo was saying on Twitter yesterday that the problem is it's just too easy, that he's won four doubles in a row. Nobody had ever won more than two cups in a row before. So it's almost like, well, so what if they win 5 or 6 or 7 or 20? They have to do it in the Champions League. And maybe he feels that they just aren't the resources there to do it in the Champions League.
Is there anywhere he could go that's better than Arsenal? You know, because Arsenal actually getting into the top four is not a guarantee, is it?
Yeah, but maybe he sort of thinks, well, I can make the club my own image. I can, you know, I can do things my own way without being beholden to directors who are controlling me all the time. I don't know, but I can see why he would think that sticking at Juve is not really progressing.
I've read from people who know more than me that it might not be a good fit at Arsenal, that Allegri will want to do things in his own image, and perhaps Arsenal directors don't quite want another Wenger in that sense, that he might be slightly troubled.
Yeah, I mean, on the other hand, it may be that he can get away with much more at Arsenal because they have the Wenger template in mind, and any sort of compromise on that is seen as being huge progress.
Juve concealed the Serie A title away at Roma at the Stadio Olimpico on Sunday. That was their 13th Coppa Italia victory. Shockingly, PSG won the French Cup, beating third-tier Les Herbiers. A lot of people celebrating Dani Alves's record, the most titles won by a player, 38 career trophies.
But he's picked up an injury, hasn't he? And is now a doubt for the World Cup.
Is that so?
Yeah. So, yeah.
And he'd be a huge loss for Brazil because he's the one guy they don't really have cover for.
Yeah, exactly. The one position where I think they're really, where they don't have enormous resources is right back. So without Dani Alves, yeah, I think they do. Suddenly, there's a bit of a gap in that squad.
When are England meeting Brazil?
Quarter final.
In the final. Yes. Oh, it's going to be so exciting.
Did Neymar turn up for the cup final? Was he there?
He was not there for the league celebrations. Yeah. If he can't be asked for the league, I doubt he'd be asked for the cup.
Well done, Dani Alves. 23 trophies for Barcelona, 5 for Sevilla, 4 for PSG, 3 for Brazil, 2 for Juventus, 1 for Bahia. Is that how I pronounce it?
And a partridge in a pear tree.
In La Liga, Real Madrid lost 3-2 to Sevilla. They were 3-0 down. Ramos hit the bar from the penalty spot. Then he scored a penalty. Why is Ramos taking penalties?
He does kick it quite hard.
And Ronaldo's hurt his ankle, hasn't he?
Right, okay, yeah, that's the bigger issue.
Yeah, the second choice penalty taker. Barca beat Villarreal 5-1, who did give them a guard of honour. Coutinho, Paulinho, Messi and 2 for Dembele. His second goal was brilliant. He ran from inside his own half, took on 4 players before chipping the keeper. Let's look ahead to the Premier League fixtures. Craig says, with pretty much nothing to play for this weekend, what can we do to make the games more exciting? My vote would be to put the smallest player to go in goal, and the manager has to play up front.
Yeah, that's a good idea. Maybe every team has to play one of their supporters.
Well, like Price is Right.
Pick a fan out of the stand, get him kitted out, and he plays.
I don't care, I'm playing cricket.
Okay. Barney, are you at a game?
No, I anticipated that nothing of any interest would be happening this weekend, so I'm not.
Okay, yeah, Liverpool-Brighton. Liverpool need a point to secure a Champions League spot. Chelsea go to Newcastle needing a win and hoping Liverpool lose to get fourth. Huddersfield-Arsenal is Arsene Wenger's last ever game with Arsenal. And it'll be a big party because the Huddersfield fans will be happy. That'll be a nice place to go. Obviously, there's that Southampton, Man City and Swansea-Stoke 10-goal swing that Swansea need. And in pointless games, Spurs, Leicester, Palace, West Brom, Burnley, Bournemouth. Narrow the Angle says, I'm reasonably certain that Bournemouth would have been relegated without the performances of Nathan Ake this year. Just in case any neutrals don't appreciate how good he was Bournemouth's Player of the Month for August, October, November, December, February, March and April.
It's quite consistent.
It's very impressive, isn't it? Manchester United play Watford, West Ham play Everton. Avid David says, squeaky bum time is a horribly cheesy expression that has also become a cliche. It doesn't work as a group of syllables. It lacks grace. I don't mind rhyme language, but some phrases get accepted into the vernacular too easy. That was the headline that we put on Monday's pod. And I agree, it's not a phrase I like.
And it's also probably not what Alex Ferguson said. There is a theory he said, squeeze your bum time, not squeaky.
Well, squeaky's a weird idea, isn't it? The onomatopoeia doesn't quite work there. I mean, I don't know about you, but squeaky, really? I mean, I think of mice squeaking. Is that...
No, I'm with you. I don't believe mine has ever squeaked.
Yeah, I prefer Mick McCarthy's variation of having your backside hanging above the bacon slicer. That sort of, it's more Bond-style death contraption tension to that.
Yeah, but what's Bond? Hang on. But it doesn't work. If you're above a bacon slicer, you're fine because of the guard on it underneath. Well, unless the bacon slicer is upside down.
Bacon, yeah, an upside down bacon slicer.
Which Bond film was that in? Bond was the one that was hung upside down at an inverted bacon slicer?
Or it might be mixing it up with the old style Batman.
Either way, from now on, we will use
the inverted bacon slicer.
Inverted bacon slicer.
And Jonathan will write, that's the next title for the next book.
I struggle with titles, so yeah.
Have you seen the Bolton fan who promised to get an Aaron Wibraham tattoo on his leg if Aaron Wibraham scored the goal that kept them up? Aaron Wibraham duly did so, and now all the Bolton first team are tormenting this poor guy on Twitter and Instagram, going, "When are you getting it done?
We someone getting
see
a Gary Monk
yeah,
one done."
And Gary Monk's paid for it. Yeah, was it? I think it was a Middlesbrough fan said they'd get a Gary Monk tattoo if Birmingham
stayed up.
Yeah,
if Birmingham stayed up. I don't know why it was a Middlesbrough fan. I presume it was a Birmingham fan. We spent significantly more time on that than we did on the Premier League fixtures, but you know, the season's done, isn't it? Barry, thank you for your time.
Thank you.
Barney, thank you.
Thanks.
Jonathan, thank you.
Thank you.
We'll be back on Monday.
For more great podcasts from The Guardian, just go to theguardian.com/podcasts.